Accession number 24189, Real 1.
Mr. Harry Carter, Real 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Carter?
I was born in Gravesend on the 25th of November, 1924.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background, as much as you can?
Well, my father was a papermaker, and my mother was the daughter of a pub licensee. I had one brother and five sisters.
Was it a comfortable upbringing? Was your dad in? Was it steady business? Paper trade?
Well, fairly steady, but at times there was short time working. So, and money was a bit difficult at those times.
But the family coped.
We coped, yes.
And what about your school? What's your education?
Well, I went to, first of all, to an infant school and then to a junior school. And then I passed a scholarship to the a private school.
Which one?
Which was the Kent County School for Boys. And the fees for a term there were 4 guineas. But as I won a scholarship, I didn't have to pay.
And what do you remember of your time there? Was it a day boy school?
Yes. Well, I wasn't really happy there. I was happier at the junior school, more happy than I was at the private school.
Why were you unhappy? What was it, you think?
Well, I think it was a totally different atmosphere. And I wasn't really interested in an academic career. I would have preferred, I think, in retrospect, I would have preferred to have gone to a technical college.
What were your favourite subjects then? Was it the technical maths and sciences?
Yes, I would much rather have had the technical subjects. Yes.
What about sport? Were you interested in sport?
No, not at all. I've never been interested in sport in my whole life. I've never taken exercise, except when I was forced to in the forces. And I always quote Peter O'Toole, who said that the only exercise he gets is walking behind the coffins of his friends who've taken exercise.
And did you have any particular hobbies when you were younger? Were you in the Scouts or any Boys Brigade or anything like
no,
that?
No.
Any hobbies or, important hobbies?
Not really, no.
And how old were you when you left school then?
15. And how I came to leave school was because the war started. And
well, what do you remember about the start of the war then first? I mean, did you hear the broadcast or do you remember?
Oh, yes. I heard the broadcast. And I was an ARP messenger at the time. And I can well remember the air raid warden rushing along telling everybody to get undercover because the air raid siren went.
Now, what were your duties as an air raid messenger? When had you started that?
Well, probably about a year before the war started, when the ARP came into being, and I decided to, I wanted to do something, so I just became an ARP warden, and it was carrying messages between the warden's posts.
Where were they at the time in Gravesend?
What do you mean, where were they?
Where were they situated? I mean,
in various places.
You don't remember?
Not really, no, they were scattered over the area.
And what sort of messages were you carrying?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, I was just given messages to take to...
They weren't verbal, they were written?
Oh, no, they were written messages, yes.
And how long were your shifts? Were you on sort of...
Well, I can't really remember.
Now, at the outbreak of war, you said you left school. Why was that?
Well, I left school because the school was evacuated to Beccles in Suffolk. And I didn't want to be evacuated. I was firmly against it. I wanted to stay with my family.
Well, you just felt that you weren't worried about staying?
No, I just wanted to stay with my family.
So what work did you take on?
Well, as my father was a paper maker, I went to a paper mill and worked in the sample office as a sample boy, which meant that I had to take samples off all, every reel of paper that was manufactured and take them to the lab where they would be tested to make sure that they were up to standard.
And you started that in late 39 then?
I started that, no, I left school in 40, so it was the beginning of 40, so I started that then. I did that for a few months, and then my grandfather, who was a licensee of a public house in Plumstead, London, decided to ask me to go to work for him, you see. And I went to work for him in the public house.
What as?
As a bar cellarman.
Did you enjoy that work?
Yes.
What exactly did you have to do? Can you tell us a bit about it?
Well, I had to serve behind the bar, and before we opened and after we closed, we had to clean. Clear up after the customers had gone, and before in the mornings there was dusting and floor scrubbing and cleaning and everything else to do, and then I had to. My grandfather had a manager, but the manager was called up for war work and worked in Woolwich Arsenal, which meant that he couldn't do the cellar work, which meant tapping the barrels of beer and cleaning the pumps and all that sort of thing, and carrying up the crates of beer and into the bar and things like that.
It's quite an art looking after beer, isn't it?
Oh yes, yes. More so in those days, because you had to add finings to the beer, which would then work and clear the beer, so that it was absolutely clear when it came from the pump. Whereas I don't think they had to do that today.
How would you do that? I mean, would you just...
You had to add what they called finings. I think it was isinglass. You added that to the barrel of beer, and then it would more or less ferment, I suppose.
So how long were you doing this for?
I did that until the beginning of 43.
What happened then?
My grandfather sold the public house, and we came back to live in Gravesend. I lived with them, and I was waiting to be called up for the Navy, for National Service, not necessarily the Navy. I was waiting to be called up for National Service, and I took a job at a marine engineering firm. And they were engaged in converting Thames lighters into invasion barges.
Tell us a bit about that. That's quite interesting on its own. How exactly were you doing it?
Well, these Thames lighters, they were fitted with engine. A lighter is normally towed, as you know, by a tug. But these lighters were fitted with engines, and then they had a huge fuel tank fitted. And they were intended for the invasion, you see. And at the same time, at the same shipyard, they were repairing a Norwegian ship that had, by the looks of it, come off the scrap heap. And they were repairing that so that it could go into service as a merchant ship, you see. It was called the Thorhaft. It was a Norwegian ship, Norwegian crew.
And you were working on that as well?
Yes, yes.
Did you enjoy the work?
Yes, yes. I enjoy working with my hands, you see.
Had you got many engineering skills at the time, or were they teaching you?
They were teaching me, yes.
Were you an apprentice, or...
No,
just,
no.
Just a labourer? Yes,
yes,
Now, just going back a bit, just some general things. What about the air raid precautions that were brought in, you know, during the war? What do you remember of the perhaps take the shelters first. What sort of air raid shelters did you use, either in the house or communal ones?
Well, what happened was that when there was an air raid, the sirens would go, and my mother would get the children up. And we would all go along to a cooperative warehouse, which had been strengthened and was used as an air raid shelter. But this went on for some time, but then people became quite blasé about this and decided not to go to the shelters. They would just stay indoors. They just didn't bother to go to the shelters, and they would stand out in the street and watch the dog fights and everything else. I mean, they just...
So you didn't have an Anderson shelter or a Morrison shelter?
No.
So you stopped going to the...
Yeah.
What about the blackout? How did you black your house out, and what do you remember of what the effect it had?
Well, just with blackout curtains and blinds, that's all.
What was it like getting around at night with the blackout on?
Outside, it was pretty grim. It was pretty grim. Especially as at that time we used to get lots of fogs as well. And wandering around in the blackout, in a fog as well, because it was pretty grim.
What about the air raids? Were there many in the Gravesend area?
Yes.
What can you tell us anything about what it was like during the air raids?
Well, it was quite frightening. You could hear the aircraft going over, and the anti-aircraft guns were all around Gravesend, and there were mobile guns that would patrol the streets as well. So you could have one just a few yards away from your house, and they were extremely noisy. And I think they were more frightening than the air raids themselves.
Were there any bombs dropped near you? I mean, were many dropped on Gravesend?
Oh, yeah, quite a few dropped on Gravesend. And also several rockets as well were dropped on Gravesend.
The V-1s?
The V-1s were the doodle bugs, weren't they? The V-2 were the rockets.
That would be later, after you'd gone into the Navy.
After I'd gone into the Navy, yes.
Did you have any particular close escapes from during the bombing raids? Or
not that I can remember, but when I went to live in Plumstead at my grandfather's pub, his pub was in Plumstead High Street, which runs parallel to Woolwich Arsenal, and of course they concentrated on bombing Woolwich Arsenal, and several of our customers were actually killed in Woolwich Arsenal where they worked. And our public house had all the windows blown out because a bomb dropped just across the road, and we were also bombed with incendiary bombs which landed on the pub, so it was quite hairy up there.
How would you help put the incendiaries out? Did you have your own thing, or would that be done by the professionals?
Well, anybody would try to put them out, because they issued people with stirrup pumps and things like that for that purpose.
Did it work?
Well, it's pretty amateurish thing, really, you know. It wasn't, I suppose they did stop some fires, yes.
You were an ARP messenger. Did you do any other ARP work, you know, as you got older?
No.
How long did you keep up the ARP messaging? Was it just the first year or a couple of years?
Just the first couple of years, and then I went into the Home Guard.
Oh, tell us about that. When did you join the Home Guard?
Oh, I couldn't... let me see. I would think that would have been... probably the beginning of 43. And I was in the machine gun company, and they taught me to fire a rifle and a revolver and a Vickers machine gun.
Now, let's start from... Where was... Did it have a name? It was a machine gun company, but was it a particular battalion, or was it just Gravesend Home Guard or Plumstead Home Guard, whichever?
It was Gravesend Home Guard. Headwaters company.
Machine gun section headquarters company.
Yes.
And where did they meet? Or where did you do your training?
Well, they met in a... They had a house, a headquarters house, a large house in Gravesend. But they used to take us up to one of the local viewpoints, Windmill Hill. and we would do training up there. And then they would also take us down to the ranges, because Gravesend had ranges for firing for the army.
Now, what do you remember of your training? If we start, you know, drill, how did you take to drill, foot drill?
Well, that wasn't too bad. No, that was okay. I didn't dislike that.
You were all right with it?
Yes.
And what about learning the rifle first, I presume, before you entered the machine gun?
Yeah. That was quite interesting, yes.
How did they go about training you?
Well, they were all ex-army. Most of them were First World War veterans. And they just trained us the way they would have trained their...
Were you a good shot?
Yes, I was quite a good shot, yes.
What do you think made you a good shot? Or, you know, I mean, was it your eyesight or cold?
Well, I don't really know. Just a natural ability, I would imagine.
Now, what about the machine gun training? Was it the Vickers or the Lewis?
No, Vickers.
And what sort of training did you get on that? Because that's...
Well, basically stripping it down and putting it back together again and all that sort of thing, really.
And what about firing it?
Yeah, but only a very short duration, because I mean there was a shortage of ammunition and everything else.
They have a gun team, there's different members of the gun team. Which one were you?
I can't remember.
And what about exercises? What kind of exercises did you do with the Home Guard?
Well, while I was there, not many exercises at all, actually, while I was there. No.
What about routine work, the sort of patrolling and guard duties?
The only guard duty that I can remember doing was when they had a Spitfire on display at the clock tower and they needed people to guard it all night to stop people touching it or anything, and had to guard that.
But you weren't providing sort of coastal guards or
No, that didn't come into it.
Anything else you did with the Home Guard?
Not that I can remember. No.
Now, you're getting near call up. I'm not quite sure when you were called up.
I was called up
June 1943. Now, what's your memory of your call up?
Well, I just remember travelling up to Skegness by train. Up the East Coast.
How did you come to be in the Navy? Do you see what I mean? Who had you chosen that?
Yes, well, when I had to go down to Chatham for a medical, they asked us what branch of the service we'd like to go into, and I said the Navy. And the reason I chose the Navy is because my father was in the Navy in the First World War. And then... So they said that I'd have to take an aptitude test. So they were looking for people to join the Navy, so I was able to get into the Navy. But then when I went to Skegness, I had to do an aptitude test to see whether I would, because I had to choose a trade, and I chose to be a telegraphist.
Now, what was the aptitude test for that, or what do you remember?
Well, it was. All these things where you've got certain boxes that you have to tick and words that you have to, word association and all that sort of thing, to see whether you'd got you were suitable to be trained as a telegraphist. Obviously, you had to have a certain standard of education. And I passed that test, and so I was able to... After doing basic training at Skegness.
What about your basic training? What do you remember of your basic training at Skegness?
That was a bit horrendous.
What about the reception when you first got there and kitting out? What do you remember of that?
I can remember... the thing that embarrassed me more than anything else was that I took twice size 12 boots, you see, and I was quite embarrassed by this, because I didn't want to... they were Wrens that were issuing all the uniforms, you see, and I was a bit embarrassed, but the chap in front of me was an Australian, And when she said boots, he said 13. And I didn't mind asking for 12 then.
What kit did you get? What uniform and kit did you get? Do you remember?
Well, a jumper, trousers, collars, jerseys, white fronts, lanyard, black silk, socks, underwear, and boots. Yes, that's about. And a hat. Yeah.
And then, how did they? I mean, did you? How did they treat you? I mean, did they tell you what was coming, or brief you, or you know, because you come in a civilian.
Oh yes. One of the things they had to do was to impress upon you that you couldn't be late for anything. I mean, coming from Civvy Street, in Civvy Street, I mean, 5 minutes didn't matter. In the Navy, it did. 5 seconds mattered, you know. They would say on parade, you were 3 seconds late, and all this sort of thing, you see, to impress upon you the necessity for being punctual. And it was, unpunctuality was frowned upon.
What was your accommodation like? It was an old Butlins, wasn't it? Or a holiday camp. I'm not sure it was a Butlins, but...
Yeah, this one was a Butlins holiday camp.
What was your accommodation like?
Well, it was just chalet-type accommodation.
Can you describe them? Because they're not there anymore, most of them.
No, well, usually they either... most of them have got two double bunk beds, in other words. Above one another, and you had to go along to a toilet block to wash and shower and everything else. There are no facilities. It's purely for sleeping.
Any heating? Oh, mind you, it was July, wasn't it?
It was July. No, there'd be no heating at that time. No.
Now, what was the basic training? Can you just give us an idea? You said it was pretty tough.
Well, because you got some square bashing, which was completely, to some people, it wasn't too bad for me because I'd done some in the Home Guard, but some people that hadn't done any square bashing, it came very hard. But the instructors were quite brutal.
In what way?
Well, they didn't stand any nonsense, and they sort of shouted a lot, and they were quite aggressive. Seemed to us anyway, they were knocking us into shape.
And what else were they training you in?
At that time, just square bashing and routine, you know, naval routine, how to salute, how to put the uniform on, because they give you all this kit, but you've got no idea how to put it on. How to wear it, because
what do you mean? Explain a bit more.
For the simple reason, you pull your jumper on over your head, but first of all, you've got to put the collar on. You put the collar on a certain way; it's tied with tapes. And then you pull the jumper over the top of that, and then you pull the collar out, because the jumper has got a collar, but also this blue and white collar goes outside of that. And then there's a certain way to fold you have a silk, and you have to fold that a certain way, and that goes around your neck, and then the lanyard has to go on, and has to go on in a certain fashion. It's quite complicated. It's not just like putting on trousers and a back dress. It's quite complicated.
What else do they teach you? Any seamanship?
No seamanship. No.
None at all?
No.
Not for anyone, not just the telegraphist.
Maybe for seamen, but certainly the telegraphist didn't. You see, what you've got to remember is a peacetime telegraphist took you 2 years to train, and he would be trained in seamanship and everything else. But in wartime, they couldn't afford the luxury of teaching telegraphists and signalmen. They were so short of them that they had to cut their course from 2 years to 28 weeks, and all you concentrated on was your trade.
So that once they got you to march, salute and wear your uniform, that was about all they were bothered about.
That's right, yeah.
Just one thing, what was your first impression of naval food? Because you get your first food there. I mean, did it bother you? Was it good, bad, indifferent?
No, it didn't bother me. Not in the training, no. The food was not too bad.
How did you get on with the rest of the lads, the other recruits?
Yeah, quite well.
Were they from the same sort of background as yourself?
No. Varied backgrounds and varied various parts of the country. There were Scotsmen, Welshmen, Cornishmen, all sorts of people, Londoners. But
you got on all right?
Yeah, we all got on.
No bullying? No, I mean, not by you or of you, but no, necessarily, but no, any bullying amongst
the group? I can't remember any bullying, no.
And so you were there about a month, I see, into June 43.
That's right, yeah. And then I went to, I was there in June, but I went to Scotia in July, 17th of July.
Now, where's it's another shore station, isn't it, yes, HMS Scotia?
Yeah, that was another Butlins holiday camp. It was Butlins holiday camp AYR.
In Scotland?
In Scotland, yes.
And you went there, well, the middle of July, 43.
Right, yeah.
And
that was...
What were you doing there?
That was when we started our trade training.
And tell us how this started you off. Firstly, if you tell us what a telegraphist is, just because some people don't know now.
I was saying, well, a telegraphist in the Navy, it would be a wireless operator in the other forces. That's basically what it is. They're not called wireless operators in the Navy, but in the Air Force and the Army they are.
So how did this start you off on your trade training, remembering it was so compressed? So it must have been quite a hard job to get.
Well, they started off by, you had to learn the Morse code, obviously.
Yeah, let's do that first. How did you know it at all?
No.
How did they train you to do it, and how did they get your speed up? Because it's
well, what they do, they give you a card with the Morse code on it, and it's up to you to learn the basic Morse code. And then they start you off at about four words a minute. Now, a word is five letters. They average it out. They say that a word is five letters. So you learn four words a minute is 20 letters a minute, you say. Well, then they start you off at this, and you're very slow at first, but then you have to, they are sending you a message, they're sending you the Morse, and you have to write it down. But then each week it goes up one word a minute. So they gradually increase it, and you have a test at 8 weeks. If you fail the test at 8 weeks, they would backclass you. If you failed again when you reached 8 weeks and you failed again, then you would be out.